Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of Rock Talk Happy Hour. Ooh, I almost forgot the name of the show. Wow. This is the very first episode. And my name is Mario with Kimberly, Frank, and Britt. So everybody say hi.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Sweet. All right, so this is going to be an intro episode just to let you guys know what the podcast is all about. We love beer. We love music. So we decided, you know, we talk about it enough. Why not make a podcast out of it? I love doing podcasts. I've had a couple in the past, but this is more of my interest than anything else. So I thought this would be a good idea to give a shot, and no one else is doing it. So hope you guys enjoy. We're going to be learning about beer as we go along, because I know we like trying different beers. We'll learn about, not of course in this episode, but through our journey in doing this podcast, we'll learn about pale ales, ales, stouts, porters, lagers, pilsners, wines, whiskeys, whatever, you know, that's an alcoholic beverage. We're going to learn about it. We're also going to be talking about music because we love music. So I just wanted to go around real quick and just have everyone introduce themselves, say a little bit about your music background, whether, you know, when you started listening to music, when you, you know, just your music side, you know, a little background on that and about what you like to drink too. So on top of that, this podcast is going to be us drinking and trying new beers and never repeating. So if you hear us talking about a beer or a wine or a whiskey on this podcast, we're not going to have it again. We're going to have a different one every time. So yeah, we're never going to repeat. And there's going to be a table on our website at rocktalkhappyhourpod.com. So Frank, you want to go first and tell us a little about your music background and what you're doing? What kind of drinks you like to?
Sure. So my name is Frank. My music background, was maybe about 10 or so when I started playing guitar, and 12 when I started playing bass. I take a lot of my music talents, I guess, from my dad's side of the family, a lot of musicians there. And I have pretty much played in bands since I was 14, and all sorts of bands, all sorts of genres. I've pretty much been doing music for the past, 20 years or so?
And I think we've been doing a lot of music, like, together for that amount of time, too. Because, people don't know, but me and Frank go way back. Even our moms know each other.
Yeah.
From school, so, yeah, we've been, my first band was with Frank back in the day, and we actually,
back in the summer of 69.
Yeah. And we were lucky enough to actually do some, I'm not going to say we toured, we didn't. We did a road trip playing shows on a lot of the East Coast of the U.S. And I know he did some shows when we weren't together, and I did shows when, you know, when we weren't together. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah. I will pretty much listen to anything. I'm not judgmental. I'm not picky. Even if it's some shitty pop country, I'll still try to find some valid.
I don't know about that. I mean,
to it,
country's, you know, not allowed in this household.
No, so. but I feel if you have a good appreciative ear, you'll probably get past some of the not so cool things about it and try to find something of worth.
Yeah, there's definitely some, like, what's the word? Like, there's some gold in a lot of the shitty genres too. Like, even in those, like, you'll have something. At least one thing good out of the sea of, you know,
right.
crap or whatever. But, and I'm going to say that because there's a lot of stuff I don't like. And, you know, but I mean, yeah. But yeah, I mean, and what do you like to drink?
What do I like to drink?
Well, because I know now you switched over. But
for the past 6 months, I've been drinking non-alcoholic beers. Surprisingly, they are really, really good. There are some hit or misses. If you go more the craft route, you're going to find some really good stuff. If you stick to the traditional, I guess, like old duels type stuff, you're not going to have a good time with that. But, you know, definitely my favorite drink is Heineken Zero. It's zero alcohol. And that one, if you like the taste of Dos Equis, I think you're going to like the Heineken, especially if you squeeze a little bit of lime and put some salt in it, it's really good. That's pretty much my go-to. The one I'm drinking now, I've never tried it before. It is a Hairless Dog. The brewing company is called Hairless Dog, and it's a non-alcoholic black ale. and it's a 0% alcohol. Now, I do want to clarify some, I guess, misunderstanding about alcohol-free beers, is a lot of the alcohol-free beers are marketed as 0.5 or less. It's not to say that they are, I mean, they have trace amounts of alcohol, but you literally need to drink like 80 of them to get just the slightest buzz. Mm. But, you know, even with the lack of alcohol, they have a really good flavor to them. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to try one of those later because I know you brought some of those. So I'll give that a shot. Who wants to go next? Or you got some more?
I don't know if I have any more. It just, you know, I'm just the guy that likes to listen to music and drink some good stuff.
We'll learn more about him later because as I said, this is an intro episode, so our main topic today is going to be our top 10 albums that we love and enjoy. So we'll talk about that so you can get to know us a little more and see where our music tastes are. And of course, we'll be talking about beer along the way too. But Britt, would you like to give it a shot?
Sure. My name is Britt. I'm the only non-musician in the group, so I don't play any instruments unless you count.
I've seen her sing karaoke. That counts.
Yeah, totally. I got your karaoke. I could probably handle a tambourine. That might be about it. But I've loved music my whole life, and I've been really into listening to music since I was a kid, and I was really influenced by my older sister, and I thought she was so cool, and she was into New Wave, and so I was always listening to New Wave. But that's one of my favorite genres. I also love punk and post-punk as well. And so, love going to shows back when we were allowed to. And
yeah,
I'm looking forward to being able to do that again one day. But
and yeah. One thing that's cool about Frank and Britt is these guys are always going to, well, before pre-COVID, they were always going to out-of-state shows and stuff. So we're going to get to hear stories from these guys from, you know, different bands and shows from all over, which is cool. Kim and I like to go to shows too, but we usually stay here in the, you know, Austin, San Antonio area. We would like to branch out, but of course, with this whole COVID thing going on, I don't know when that's going to happen. But yeah, no, thank you, Britt. So we'll talk more about that stuff in a bit too.
Yeah.
Kim, your turn.
Okay. My name is Kimberly. I am a musician as well. I didn't tap into those talents as early on as my buddies here. However, I do have a family background of musicians. My dad is a musician, my grandma, his mom, and his uncle, and kind of just goes back from there. I didn't tap into those talents up until about 2017, 2018. I started playing the drums in a tribute band, and I actually started learning piano with my grandmother. I currently play bass in a tribute band, but we'll talk more about that at another point. Music. I love music. My music tastes have evolved. I don't want to age myself. However, they did start in the pop age when pop was really big, NSYNC, Britney, you know, all that stuff. And then it evolved into alternative from that era, which is my diehard fave. I'm a big 90s alternative fan and other things as well, but I guess we'll find out more about that as we go on.
Yeah. And then real quick,
Britt, I didn't get to ask you, what are you drinking right now? I forgot. Oh, did you talk about that?
No, I think I forgot to mention that. I'm also drinking a non-alcoholic beer with Frank here. It's from a company called Surreal Brewing Company, and it's a Kolsch style beer, non-alcoholic. Pretty good.
Do you,
I like it.
Do you guys know anything like about the Kolsches or the ales? Like, because of course, if you don't, that's what this podcast is about. I know there's probably a lot of people that don't know about, you know, the different types of beer. But yeah, we're gonna learn about that too.
Kolsches, I don't know a whole lot of. Back when I was drinking beer, I was really all about like the Hefeweizens, the very weedy stuff.
The sour beers.
And the sour beers are good.
Yeah. I don't think I've tried one. I've seen them around, but I haven't tried one.
Yeah, sour beers are definitely a good one to have.
Speaking of that, like, it's so crazy because, I can speak for us too. I don't know about you guys because I know you guys like Shiner too. But I'm a big Shiner fan, and the cool thing about Shiner is that they have Kolsches, they have IPAs, which IPAs I still haven't really gotten into. I don't really like IPAs too much. Even the Shiner stuff. They have They have all types of beer. So that's one thing I like about Shiner. You're going to hear a lot about Shiner on this podcast, but we're going to be branching out from that. Shiner just has so many different types that I'm going to try to go through all of them as much as I can. They even have a whole bunch of seasonal ones that come out during different times of the year. Kim, what are you drinking?
I'm not a big drinker. I have never really been a big drinker up until I met Mario or got reconnected with Mario back in 2018. I like to try different things. I'm currently drinking right now. I don't want to butcher this. Lionkugel Summer Shandy.
I think that's what it is.
Summer Shandy. I really, really love this this brand. I just discovered them not too long ago. Probably about a year. And
I think they're from Wisconsin, so we can trust them.
I mean, we'll talk about more because I will probably be drinking them throughout. But
it's got some lemon.
This Summer Shandy is a Weiss beer brewed with honey and natural lemon flavor. So that one's actually pretty good. I did have the orange one a couple weeks ago or last week, and I really, really liked that one. And that one was really good dressed with like chili powder. We're in San Antonio, so we like to dress our beers kind of weird sometimes. And that one was really good with the chili powder. This one actually is too, because it has that lemon flavor with it. But I'll drink, I love me a frozen margarita. I just had one actually before we got started. I'll try whiskey if Mario makes me try whiskey, because he loves whiskeys. I'll try these different beers because he loves these beers. Like I said, it all leads back to Mario.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a bad influence. Well, I mean, I actually just got into whiskey myself. Like maybe it's weird because she doesn't drink whiskey. And I didn't start drinking whiskey till about 2 years ago. So I started really getting into it. I want to try more. What I'm drinking right now is I love coffee. Of course, I love beer. So Blue Moon has an iced coffee blonde. And I like to smell every beer that I get and try just to see if I can smell the hints of what it has inside it. Sometimes I guess right. I'll try to guess it before I even taste it. This one smells like a Starbucks drink. It really does. It has a real distinct coffee smell. You can tell. You really can't smell anything else but the coffee. What? Oh, I don't know what you said. But anyways. Oh yeah. I will. I'll get to that. But So that's what I'm drinking right now. And on top of that, everything that we drink, like I said, is going to be on the website, and you can see what we drink per episode. You can try them yourselves and let us know what you think, and then also suggest beers to us, because I know there's a lot of regional stuff. For example, there's Yingling. So Yingling, apparently it's like, I don't know if this is true or not, but somebody told me that that's like the Bud Light of that region, but it doesn't taste like Bud Light to me.
So we thought we were basic when we were all like excited about it, but we never had it before. And so we thought it was really good. And people are like, oh, you're drinking, like, that's nothing. That's just like the Budweiser
And then speaking of that, Frank and I actually had the regional version of that, I guess, when we went up to the Northeast. What was that beer that we had in Washington? It was like their thing where you could only get it in the Northeast.
Northwest, actually.
Oh shit. Yeah, you're right. Northwest, I'm sorry.
You're cut off.
I don't know why. It was Northwest. I've never been to the East Coast, West Coast.
I think it was Rainier.
There you go, because Mount Rainier. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Is it Rainier? Rainier? I don't know. I think it's. I thought it was Rainier, but whatever. If you guys are in the region, you guys know what we're talking about. But yeah, we had that, and I actually enjoyed that pretty. And it doesn't taste like. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I shouldn't have said Bud Light. I should have said Lone Star, because our Lone Star is like their Yingling, is like their Mount Rainier. But they're all pretty good. I really like the Yingling.
Love me a $2 can of Lone Star Light.
Yeah.
A bar of Rico.
Yeah, and actually.
Also, I don't know if you remember, but being on the West Coast maybe has something to do with the elevation, but I got drunk faster.
Oh, probably. I mean, maybe. I mean. That sounds, I don't know, it's probably some science behind it.
I remember after two, I was like, what's going on?
And also the interesting thing is too, Yingling is actually the oldest brewery in the U.S. And I tried to fact check it. That's what it says on the bottle, but I trust it. And I looked, and apparently, like, it is. Like, that is the oldest, that is the oldest brewery. But, so about that, Kim was reminding me, I had to talk about myself. I forgot, actually. So, same with Frank. I mean, I started playing, I started playing guitar when I was 10. So I've been playing for, let me see if I can do the math real quick. 22 years. Yeah, I've been playing music for 22 years. I've been in punk bands. I've been in metal bands. I've been in the type of music I like to stick to when I write is alternative rock or alternative metal. Frank was with me in a couple versions of those bands, and I also played drums in school. So drums I never really stuck to outside of school. I'll touch them every once in a while. Just because I think it's fun, but guitar has been my thing. I've always been into music and metal, especially when I was younger. I think I started listening to alternative first, like Matchbox and stuff like that. So a lot of the late 90s alternative stuff. And then when I was younger, my dad listened to a lot of classic rock, classic metal. So he listened to a lot of Sabbath and Iron Maiden and stuff like that, AC/DC. And then that kind of leaked in, and I know this is kind of cliche and everyone talks about it, but Metallica, I guess, was kind of the gateway for me to get into that stuff, even though my dad did have a lot of those vinyl, which I have now. I kind of inherited them. I grew up a metalhead. Then I kind of branched out and got into other stuff. But going to our list, you'll see where we came from and where we were at. Like, and I guess we'll talk about more. Talk more about that as we go through our lists. But how do you guys want to do it? Do you want to go like everyone go straight through their 10, or do you want to go 10, 10, 10, 9, 9, 9 all the way around?
I was thinking maybe all the way around, so that way
take a break.
Everybody's 10 or 9 or 8 is, you know,
cool.
And then you know what I mean.
Cool, and then we'll talk about it and, you know, just have a conversation about it. Because we, like I said, we like to hang out and drink and just talk about music. And we end up having some pretty interesting conversations. But I just thought it'd be something that, you know, we can involve more people in. Instagram, Facebook, you know, Twitter, all you guys can hit us up there. You can go to the website, like I said, rocktalkhappyhourpod.com. Leave us your comments, suggestions, all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. And you guys, actually, when we're done with this, this is our top 10 list. We'll actually have albums that didn't make it to our top 10, and I'll have it on our blog on our website, so you can check that out too, and leave us your top 10 on Facebook, anywhere you want to. Who wants to go first with their number 10?
I guess I'll go first. Okay, so I just want to say that even though I have more of a metal background given the music I've played, my list is super varied. Like, it there's nothing
that's good
that, but you know, I feel like that's where some of the best music comes from. You listen to stuff outside of the music you play, and that definitely shapes you as a musician. So I'm gonna start. My number 10 is Danish pop rock duo, the Ravenettes.
Oh, I've heard of them. I'm not familiar with their music, but I've heard of them.
Yeah, the Ravenettes are really, really good. Their album Raven in the Grave, to me, that's like the definitive Ravenettes. It's very dark, very broody, very different from anything they put out in the past. And I have some seasonal albums, and this album in particular I associate with winter. If you associate gloom and doom and all the, I guess, morose type feelings with winter, but there's something about it. It just feels like the perfect winter album to me. It's not cheery, but it just feels like it, like the perfect winter album.
So, like, I don't like Christmas music. You think this would replace Christmas music?
It's
for me?
Not gonna replace Christmas music at all. No.
All right, well,
no.
That's cool. I'll just skip it then. Yeah. I mean, not your album. I hate Christmas music. Sorry. So that's a little bit of my music background too. I can't stand it. But I also worked retail for a while, and would hear it like all July. And then as soon as Thanksgiving, no, I take that back. Like once November would hit. So I would hear Christmas music 3 months out of the year.
Too much.
Too, yeah, it's way too much.
Yeah.
But one thing I like about this album is, well, just in particular, the Raveonettes, they have a way of making a big sound with so little. It's just the two main people, guitar and bass, and they have session musicians doing drums and whatnot. But on Raven in the Grave, I mean, if you're a fan of walls of reverb and all sorts of fuzzy guitars and very, very minimal drumming, I don't know how to put it. I mean, it's got everything that I like about that type of music. And like I said, you know, they make such a big sound with so little. And, you know, like I said, you know, it's bombastic. It's got a lot of reverb, you know, just like walls of reverb. It's got, you know, very disorienting guitars and very skeleton-like drums. And the vocals are very ghostly. And to me, you know, I feel like that was a turning point in the band's career, because nothing prior to that sounded like what this sounded like. And I guess I wouldn't know how to really describe the album genre wise. To me, it sounds like a goth surf rock type album, if that's even a thing.
What year did this come out? Do you know?
That was like 2012, 2011, something like that. Yeah. So if you like goth music, if you like surf music, if you like indie pop, I think you'll definitely like this one.
Have you ever seen them live?
Never seen them live, no, unfortunately. That's one band that I do want to see live, but no, never seen them live.
Boo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I say that because, like, I wanted to see Rammstein later this year, and I don't know. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen anytime
probably
soon.
Probably not.
So, no. I've never seen them live. I know you've seen them live.
Yeah, but they're really good. They're really fun. They're not Danish, though.
Oh, yeah. No. They're in the general area, aren't they? But, all right, cool, man.
Who else wants to go?
Ooh, Britt said Kim. Go for it, Kim.
Okay.
I didn't do my homework.
My list isn't going to be as well thought out and have a background to it. Like, I didn't get real technical with
Speaking of that, like, you don't have, like, it's fine. You don't got to be technical. And we didn't share our lists with each other before this. So this is all new, too. I don't know what's on your list. You don't know what's on mine. Yeah. You could probably guess, but, okay, yeah.
Okay. So my number 10 would have to be Drowning Pool Sinner, which came out in 2001, which was around, I guess I was in like seventh or eighth grade back then. Cause I didn't want to age myself, but there I go. It was probably one of the first rock albums that I owned. My parents, well, not my parents, but probably my mother was like, no, I don't want you to have these albums. Cause that one, along with a couple other ones, I don't know if both of the other ones are on my list or not, but anyway, Drowning Pool Sinner came out in 2001. I was in middle school. It was one of the first albums I owned that was rock. Cause I had, or like I said, mentioned earlier, I owned like all the Britney albums and all the NSYNC albums and Backstreet Boys. And all, I was in that place in that time, of course, my age. But I really liked this album because it was one of the first rock albums that I owned, after Dave Williams passed, which was maybe a year after that album came out. I couldn't get into them again. I loved him as a vocalist, and I just could not listen to any of their other albums after him. So that one will always hold a great spot in my heart. It's at number 10, but that doesn't mean that it's any like less, you know, loved. But I can listen to it from start to finish. That's my list. My list is based on the fact that I can listen to these albums 1 through 10 from start to finish, not skipping a single track, and I could listen to it over and over and over again. So if I had 10 albums to take to a deserted island that I could like swap out, these would be the 10. So that's my number 10.
That's crazy because that album was actually, it didn't make it to my top 10, but it was there. So this will be on my list on the blog. So that album, the same how you were talking about for me, it's just an album that I enjoy listening to from beginning to end. It's just a fun album. And on top of that, they're a Texas band. So that's really cool. Another thing that's interesting is that, is that my first concert that I ever went to, I was in eighth grade. That was actually the second show I went to. It was a back-to-back show. My dad took me and my sister. So I went, my first show was on a Friday and I saw Edema. Yeah, I know. You can guess how. How
man. Yeah, are they still a thing?
They are, but not with Marky.
Right.
So, Edema Friday, right? Next day, Saturday, Jägermeister Music Tour with Drowning Pool. Supposed to be Cold Chamber on the bill, but Cold Chamber's having issues within themselves. They drop out. So I end up seeing Drowning Pool, El Nino, and I think 40 Below Summer was on that. Mm. And what's cool is I went with a buddy of mine. He came with us, and we actually saw guitarist CJ Pierce in the back. And of course, the first album came out, so I don't know if a lot of people were like real, if they were really paying attention. And so he's just back there chilling, drinking a beer. And they used to have like promotional posters. They still do at some shows, but this one had like it was a promotional poster where you can get signatures at the bottom. Mm-hmm. But I mean, who's going to get a signature? You know what I mean? So they're just hanging their tape for promotional reasons. So me and my buddy go, and there's two posters next to each other. And I go, hey, let's go get them off the gate. So they're pretty big posters. I still have them. I know Frank's seen it. It used to hang in our jam room back in the day. Yeah. So it's in a frame in storage. So we take the posters down. And I told my buddy, hey, I think that's the guitarist. And so we look at him, and I open my poster, and I was like, yeah, I think that's him. So we go up to him, and yep, sure enough, and we ask him for an autograph. Me and my buddy get the first two autographs, and then sure enough, after that, a crowd comes up, and he starts signing more posters. But what's crazy about Drowning Pool is they've gone through one, two, three, four vocalists.
Four singers.
They're on their fourth singer. I've seen all singers live except for the second vocalist, Jason Jones.
Jason Jones?
Yeah, Jason Gong Jones. Mm-hmm. So I was lucky enough to see him with Dave Williams when that first album came out. I didn't see him on the second album. I saw him with their third vocalist. I forget his name, the guy from Soil.
Soil, isn't it Sean? Sean Combs is the rapper.
I forget his name. But, so yeah, singer from Soil.
Right.
And... then the fourth singer they have, he's actually a guy, he's actually from here in Texas, and I saw him at a music festival with him too. But I think my favorite so far would be Dave Williams on the top, and then the guy from Soil, I forgot his name. But yeah, so I just want to throw that out there because that one didn't make it on my list, but yeah, it was there.
Not a surprise.
So my top 10, this one's kind of a shocker, or will be a shocker for a lot of people, because for those who know me, know that I never really got into the scene stuff. I wasn't one of those scene kids. I didn't listen to hardcore. I wasn't into breakdowns. I didn't like none of that stuff. Trashcore, our buddy on YouTube. Well, he's not our buddy, but we watch him. Trashcore and Divorced Dad Rock. But so the top 10, I didn't put these in any specific order, but this actually happened the way I'm looking at my list right now, going backwards from 10 to 1, the way I did it kind of makes sense. So number 10 for me is from a post-hardcore band called Emmanuel. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of them.
No.
Okay, these guys, I don't know how I got into them, but this is the only post-hardcore band I ever got into. And I think because they were at a level, they didn't get as much attention as the other guys, because I think they weren't cookie cutter like the other bands were. And the interesting thing about these guys is they only released two albums, not because of a fad or whatever, but because the singer dealt with mental health issues. So they broke up after that second album and they didn't get back together. Both albums that they came out with are fucking amazing. The first album, I like bands, like on my list, a lot of these bands are either, it's going to be either their first or second album. It's going to be like an early album because of I like the rawness that bands seem to capture when they come out with their debut album, especially. It depends what the producers they work with too. Sorry if I get technical, but I get technical with stuff like this. So Emmanuel, I'm actually picking their second album, which is called Black Earth Tiger. It came out in 2007. This one, compared to their first album, was not as raw. Their first album was real raw and aggressive, and it was, You can hear that. I don't know how to explain it. It was just raw. It was just quick. There was nothing extra about it. It wasn't overproduced. It was just guitars, drums, bass, boom, go. And it didn't have breakdowns. Of course, it was post-hardcore, but still, it didn't have any breakdowns. The hooks were great. It had awesome choruses. The melodies were awesome. Nothing sounded the same. That's what I loved about this band, is that every track on both albums, none of it sounded like another track that they had, which was the case for a lot of bands in those genres. So like I said, you guys know I've never been a scene kid. I never had my hair straight. Of course, it wouldn't go straight if I wanted it to. But but yeah, Black Earth Tiger. And then Black Earth Tiger, not only that, I think they recorded it themselves in one of the members' houses. They did have a producer on board, but they recorded it themselves. It was a little bit more produced than their first album, but it was a concept album. And it was... You could see the story and hear the story from beginning to end, and I just fucking love that album, Black Earth Tiger. So if no one's heard of the band Emmanuel, or you have, but I recommend check out Black Earth Tiger, post hardcore, but it's fucking amazing. Cool. So that's my number 10.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard of that band.
They're pretty damn sick. I mean, and it's real. That second album especially is real. What's the word? You could tell where they matured a little bit going mm-hmm. into that album. Just the composition, the lyricism too on both albums. I was surprised I got into this band. And unfortunately, like I can't get any other stuff like on vinyl or anything because they're not, they just, you, especially with the label I think they were on, it's just impossible. I have both their albums on CD, but that's as far as I'll ever be able to get, you know, when it comes to their discography, unless sometime in the future something happens.
I mean, I know it's not the same, but you could probably find a company that can press it onto vinyl.
Probably, but I'd rather have, I like my...
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't like bootlegs.
I know what you mean.
I mean, it depends, but...
Yeah.
What's your number 9?
My number 9? You know, I'm just going to read my notes as I wrote them. Otherwise, I'm just going to stumble and say a bunch of filler words that don't belong.
It's gonna happen once we get around number 2,
maybe. So my number 9 is Mexican rock band Caifanes, and the name of the album is El Nervio del Volcán. And Caifanes was one of the first rock and español bands that I knew about. I was 13 and discovered them through Telehit, which is Mexico's version of MTV. Part of the appeal was, you know, they had the big teased hair and the all black clothing and the makeup, and I think the music further emphasized their image. And El Nervio del Volcán is a departure of that earlier new wave sound that they had. It's very, you know, very guitar driven, that partly inspired my bass playing. And for me, this is the first time that I ever heard harmonicas, violins, tribal rhythms, and entire jazz pieces all in one album. And I feel like, you know, the band perfectly executed this in their own hard rock way. And even though the band lost two key members, their original bassist, Sabo Romo, and their keyboardist, Diego Herrera, it was, you know, a friendly split. They just wanted to do some other stuff. Before, you know, when they were working together as a band and then these two dudes left, you know, I feel like with this album, they were really making a voice for themselves, a new voice for themselves. You know, now they're down to a 3-piece. And then, you know, unfortunately, the band ended up breaking up a year after supporting the album. And so that exploration of that new voice was never really fully realized after that. And I think because it's one of those albums that was going to catapult the band into a new direction, and then things just ended for them. I think that's one of the reasons why I like that album so much, is because it opened up possibilities. It opened up new doors that we just never got to hear anymore.
Yeah. And it's crazy too, because speaking of like your, you know, the type of music you're into and stuff, when we're talking about us being in bands, you were even in a rock and Espanol band too.
I was, yeah, for about a year. It was more garage punk, garage rock sounding. It was good, you know, 3-piece bass, drum, and guitar. And I did a lot of, because of this album I just mentioned, a lot of the guitar parts, a lot of the melodic guitar parts is what actually inspired me to play melodic bass. So I don't really draw inspiration from bassists much. I draw inspiration more from guitarists, and then I figure, okay, how can I play guitar on a bass, more or less? Like, how can I get inside that guitarist mentality while still playing a bass?
I think those are the best types of bassists, because that's one thing I like playing with you, because I like playing guitar with you, but when you're playing bass with me, mm-hmm. like I can hear that too. And I think a lot of the like really good bassists that can draw from guitar players, that like it makes them a level better than just bassists that just go off of bass. Like for instance, Cliff Burton. I'm not comparing you to him, but I'm just saying like y'all are in that ballpark because Cliff played the bass. Mm-hmm. He approached it like he would approach if he would approach the guitar. And right. There's a lot of bass players like that. Well, not a lot, but I'm saying like a lot of the good ones are the ones that I think are really,
you know, that great. Would be a good list. Underrated bass players.
I mean, we could do that too. Like I said, this podcast, I wanted to continue on my original podcast. We only made it up to like episode 30 something, 37. My goal was to hit 50. So I'd like to hit 50 with this podcast. That'd be like my goal for this show. And then of course continue. Cause I think there's a lot of opportunity to learn and about music in general too. Cause we love, you know, music and beer. Cause I love beer. So obviously, you know, everyone around me gets sucked into beer. So,
right.
But yeah, no, that's, I can see that. And that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess, and you know, also too, when you hear about a lot of metal drummers, a lot of metal bassists too, they often reference jazz albums, jazz musicians that they listen to under free time. And I think a lot of the jazz technique shows in their playing. And, you know, you would never think, you know, is metalhead with long hair is listening to jazz albums, but that's just exactly what it is. And
well, a good example of that is Jay Weinberg, who plays with Slipknot. I mean, his dad is famous drummer Max Weinberg, who if anyone knows him, played drums for Conan O'Brien's band, house band. He's a jazz drummer, or he uses jazz techniques. I think he uses traditional grip instead of match grip when he plays.
I'm not sure.
So for you guys who don't know what the technical thing, match grip is when you're holding your sticks the same way with your hands gripped around the stick. Traditional would be where you hold one like you're holding a... what would you hold like this? like a guitar, I guess. Yeah. So you would hold one stick like if you were holding the neck of a guitar, and then the other one would be like a regular matchstick grip. But that's a good example too. Jay grew up with his dad playing drums.
Right, yeah.
Same thing. I mean, look at that guy. He's a sick drummer. I personally think he's better than Joey Jordison, but I mean, we can have a discussion about that another day or on Facebook or something. But I mean, that's an example there.
Oftentimes I wonder if Slipknot is just going to get tired of playing in those coveralls in like 100 degree weather and you're just going to say, fuck it. You're just going to play in shorts and t-shirts.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if when they get older, they'll just have a new suit that, it's not even a suit, just shorts and a tank or something.
Something.
A Bermuda shirt.
Kim, you ready for number 9?
Yes, this is a perfect segue into my number 9, because my number 9 is actually Slipknot Volume 3, Subliminal Verses. So that was 2004. Again, parents getting a little concerned. Slipknot, you know, famous for their masks, all different types of creatures and gore and stuff like that. So of course you could see that my mom was kind of like, what are you listening to? But I love that album. I don't know, like I said, I can listen to it from start to finish, won't skip a track. It has a lot of really good variety on there. There's a lot of the slow and like a lot of the fast. It just has a good combination of the two. So that's going to be my number 9. Oh, and I love Corey Taylor, but
I know. I think I know it too much, but I know.
You know, I've only seen Slipknot once, and it was that album that they were touring. That's the one that we saw together.
And the funny thing is, she was there too. So, So.
But I was somewhere else. I was on the floor, I think.
I think
that was a rowdy show.
Yeah, that was a crazy show. So I think
lost my car keys in the pit.
You've never seen Slipknot, right?
I have not.
Okay, so that's 3 out of 4 of us have seen Slipknot.
75%.
That was a good one.
I just love Corey Taylor because I think he's a great vocalist. I'm sure we'll get into vocalists at some point throughout the show. You can always just hear the feeling and the emotion behind his voice, I think. It's just unmatched by anybody.
I think even more so in the Stone Sour stuff. Like, you hear it more in the Stone Sour stuff.
But that's my number 9.
Sweet. Yay. Okay, so my turn, number 9. Okay, so this one was kind of not a throwaway, but It was one of those where it was like a guilty pleasure one where it wasn't technical. I just like it. I've always liked it. So this is Papa Roach's Love Hate Tragedy from 2002. To me, the first four Papa Roach albums are the best albums. I think after that, they started trying to go into genres that they didn't belong in, or started overproduce, or maybe their lyrics weren't as, they didn't have as much conviction as the ones before. But Love Hate Tragedy, I love that album from the beginning to end. And I'm also a big fan of covers when they're done right. This one actually has a Pixies cover of Gougeaway, and it's really good. I like it. I think it's good. I think they did a good job on it. This was one of their ones. This was one of the albums to me on the list, like I was talking about before, where it still stayed raw. Now, their first album, Infest, was raw AF. I mean, it was their first, their first album, of course. They were like the new metal guys who did a really good job of mixing hard rock and rap, I guess. It was a good rap rock mix. And it didn't sound like too cheesy or corny to me, at least in my opinion. But yeah, Love Hate Tragedy. I can't say too much about it. It just had that raw sound. It was simple. It wasn't overproduced. There's no boring track to me on that album. And maybe it's an album that has songs that are overlooked. There's one called Singular Indestructible Droid. I don't know if anyone knows that song, but that song's fucking awesome. I don't think they play that song live, but that album just has a lot of gems on it that I think people just don't talk about. Aside from the singles, but that's my number nine. I really can't say too much about it. I've seen Papa Roach, I think, two or three times live, and I actually in high school got a couple of pics, luckily, and I gave one to Kim actually in high school, and she still has it. And I was like, what the hell? She still has it. So I'm like, wow. So yeah, Papa Roach made it to my list, but that's just because it's just a fun album that I like to listen to.
Didn't they get their name from somebody's grandpa?
Yeah, I think it was from Jacoby's grandpa, something like that. I don't remember the exact story, but yeah.
And I think, before they had a bassist, they had a trombonist.
Oh, shit. I don't know about... I mean, yeah, I don't know too much about their history. But we'll probably talk about that another time if you get the information, because I don't... But, that's interesting. There's a band. Yeah. There's a band on my list that... There's a similar situation that happened. I'll get to it. You're probably going to be like, what the hell? But okay, yeah. So that was my number nine, Papa Roach, Love Hate Tragedy.
Cool. I've never seen Papa Roach live, but
they're good.
Heard that they put on a pretty energetic show.
They did. Now, they're pretty. Well, because we saw them.
That was like a one-man show.
Sometimes we get a habit of watching. We get a habit of watching like live shows on YouTube,
right?
Instead of watching shows, and we saw a live show from Papa Roach, and their set
Anthony
was horrible. But yeah, that guy
holds it down, man. He is over there on the drums.
Was that Tobin's cousin?
Tobin's brother, I think.
Tobin's brother. Okay,
yeah, he is like. I just had fun watching him. Like he was the show. He was the star. He was like. And I was just into it. I was feeling
it. Yeah, it was good. But I think their sets, the last time I saw them was, I want to say maybe 2015. And it was a pretty good set. But now with their recent albums coming out, it sounds like they're kind of a little late on the bandwagon, trying to dip into like the dubstep stuff a little bit, or even going into the like Imagine Dragons territory. I don't, their sets are just kind of lame. There's not a lot of guitar. Like Jerry kind of seems like, there's not a lot of Jerry, and I thought Jerry's guitar
was actually recovering from a hand injury right now, so we'll see how that
goes. Okay.
From his guitaring.
Cool. Weren't they coming to town?
Yeah.
Or did they come?
Well, my brother actually went to go. This is the story. My brother went to see him, I think, last year or earlier this year, and what happened was something happened, and they only played like two or three songs and left. Because they're all like, fuck this. Like, I don't know what happened. Something with management. Something with the promoter. They pissed him off. And something about the sound. And my brother said they played like three songs. And my brother was at that show. And they left. And they were going to reschedule a show. And I don't know if that ever happened. The whole COVID thing happening. I don't know if they ever came back. But, yeah. So.
Interesting.
But, yeah. That's my number nine.
I don't think I've ever seen a band walk off stage.
I actually haven't either. My brother said he saw it and it was crazy. And then before I go to you, just want to say I picked up one of your hairless dog non-alcoholics. I'm trying it right now. It tastes pretty good.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
It's not bad.
You want to taste it? Yeah. There you go.
All right. I've seen times where, like, shit fucks up on stage.
And, oh, yeah, me too. Plenty of times.
But, you know, the band just keeps playing while they try to figure out the problem. So for my number 8, you know, actually, a lot of my albums are really more 80s type bands that are, you know, I feel like they shaped a lot of my playing. Mm-hmm. My number 8 is the Jesus and Mary Chain, Psycho Candy. And I mean, I don't know. I just think this album is like fucking whoa.
I agree.
And the most recognizable song, Just Like Honey, was featured in Sofia Coppola's Lost in Translation. And that's actually how I first found out about the band. You know, I was watching a movie and I heard the song. It stuck with me. So I remember as soon as the movie was over, I put my shoes on, went to Sam Goody, bought the CD.
Sam Goody.
Yeah. Those days. Yeah, I know. This was like before the pre-streaming days. You actually had to physically buy a CD.
We still try to hunt them down.
I
know you guys do too, but yeah, I mean, sure.
I miss CD exchange.
I know, yeah. We haven't gone since. Well, it's because the whole COVID thing, like, we're like, But yeah, Sam Goody. Yeah, oh yeah, no, definitely.
And yeah, so, you know, I went out to the record store and I bought the CD. And on the bus ride home, I didn't want to listen to it on the bus ride home just because, you know, it's just not the right place to listen to a brand new album.
Yeah. You know,
like, I'd rather be in my room and just do that. So, yeah, you know, I was in my room. I had my CD player on. And what really drew me were, like, the guitars. You know, they were just really hazy, very, you know, fuzzed out. Like, just, it sounded like a big old wall of sound just, like, coming at you all at once. And it was very, very simple, very minimalist. And I just thought, you know, for me, it changed the entire pop structure of a song. Because, I mean, these are super, super simple songs that they're playing, but they're just adding so much to it. And it just sounds like a really, really huge sound. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just hearing this, I thought, you know, pop music to me will never be the same because of the sound that I was hearing. And it's true, you know. And the band, I think, you know, went on to... They're pretty much the foundation for what we call shoegaze rock. I don't know if you guys are familiar with shoegaze.
I've heard of the genre, but I don't know too many bands in that genre.
Yeah, so shoegaze is a really interesting genre, and it gets its name because...
You gaze at your shoes?
Yeah, essentially. The guitarists have like 20, 30 pedals out in front of them. They're always stomping on them, and it looks like you're just gazing at your shoes all the time.
I just learned something. I didn't know that.
And so, yeah, but, you know, we can go more into shoegaze later, but... just know that Jesus and Mary Chain were pretty much like the godfathers of the whole shoegaze genre.
Cool. I don't know why I thought I heard it. You remember when we played that shitty show in that junkyard? That wasn't a shoegaze band,
in the
right?
Junkyard. No. That was just like shitgaze.
Oh, shitgaze.
Yeah.
Guys, so one of these episodes, me and Frank will tell you a story about like the shittiest shows we've ever played. And then we'll have Brett and Kim talk about the shittiest shows I've ever seen. So maybe we'll do that. Yeah, well, I mean, as long as me and Frank aren't included on that list, then. But we'll probably do that next episode. That sounds just to mix it up a bit. But all right, sounds cool. So that was your number 8, right?
And yes.
Frank and I saw them open for Nine Inch Nails in Washington, D.C.
That's true, yeah.
When was
this? What, 2018 October?
Oh, so it was fairly recent.
The cool thing about that was...
Pre-COVID?
Yeah, way before pre-COVID.
COVID.
The cool thing about that was, I think it was, what? And Nine Inch Nails is like earlier... back in the earlier days, they actually opened for the Jesus and Mary Chain. And now, you know, 30 years later, Jesus and Mary Chain is opening for them. But it wasn't one of those things where it's like, oh, you know, you're the opener and we're the headliner. No, I mean, they gave them a respectable set time. And, you know, it's like when you see those co-headliner shows where you think, oh, that band's opening for that band. But then you realize, I mean, there's none of that like BS going on, none of that ego stuff. I mean, there's like...
Well, it's kind of like when we saw Nine Inch Nails, you took me to see them the first time. They played with TV on the Radio. Mm-hmm. And to me, they don't go together, but it was like...
And that's one interesting thing about Nine Inch Nails is, and one thing that I like about bands that don't take openers on the road with them that sound like them, you know, I appreciate when a headliner takes out a very unexpected artist with them on the road, and you get a little glimpse of what the band themselves likes to listen to. You know, you can go to a heavy metal show and all five bands are going to be the same genre, but if you go to a heavy metal show and the opener is like a trip hop act, and then the second opener happens to be like a punk band or something, you know, that's what I like, having like that varied bit of a music there, because then at some point it's not just gonna sound the same,
kind of like what was it, like a Pledge of Allegiance, and they have like DMX on there.
Yeah, they did.
So I guess that was like a, I guess because of how aggressive he was, but still wasn't metal. So I don't know if that was the same. I don't know if that was a good example, but you're number eight.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Cool.
My number eight is actually Foster the People's Sacred Hearts Club. I love that album. It's such a great, like, dancey, like, album. I don't know. It's hard to explain. They're kind of, like, in that album, I think it's, like, alternative-y and, like, hip-hop poppy, which I think is really fun because I love to dance. So, like, it's just a feel-good, like, dance.
She said she didn't like to dance.
When did I say that? But I really love that. Mark Foster's voice is so unique, and those notes that he hits sometimes, it's high notes. I love a good high note. I have a few high notes myself. I don't know. I just, that's such a good, fun album. It has a good mix of the pop, hip hoppy, like, cause he doesn't rap, but his approach in some of the songs are kind of rap esque. And I think that's really cool to put with the instrumentals that they have. Cause it is a band. He's not just rapping, quote air quotes, can't see my air quotes, to a track or something. Like, the band's actually contributing instrumentally. I saw them when this album came out, I believe in 2017 at the Aztec. Oh my god, that was like one of the best times ever. Like, we just danced my butt off, and I love that album. And actually their other album, which is Torches, is on my honorable mention list because I didn't want to double do, you know, a band. But yeah, that's my number nine. I'm at eight. Ooh, I don't know how to count.
Sweet. You're cut off now. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so my number eight, I don't know if it's a cliche or not, but it'll show like where my metalhead roots are. It's the self-titled album by Black Sabbath. Kim and I actually like going out looking for CDs and vinyl when we can. And I actually was hunting down an original print of this vinyl for about a month or so, or maybe a little longer. We actually went to a couple of vinyl shows trying to find it, and I ended up finding one in mint condition, because out of the vinyl that I got from my dad, that one actually wasn't in the collection. And I love that album. It's the first metal album, you know, these guys were the godfathers of metal. And it's so crazy because some of the tracks on this album are very doom metal, or what you would consider doom metal to be, because they are. But then you go forward to their last album, 13. That album, if you've ever heard it, is very doom metal. That album is awesome. I actually really like 13. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see them on their last tour, but I did see him at Ozfest, and oh man, we talk about this all the time, and I always forget what year it is. I think it was like 2005, 6 or 7. I don't remember which one it was. Sabbath headlined. It was awesome. I actually was on Front Barricade on the main stage. Tony Iommi threw a pick and I caught it. He was right in front of me, so I still have that pick to this day. But yeah, Black Sabbath, self-titled album from 1970 is my number eight. I fucking love that album.
That was my first Black Sabbath album that I bought. It was...
it's a fucking great album.
It was... I think it was a Sam Goody special.
Of course.
It's the first two albums combined in one disc.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
The second album's good, too.
The second album's good, yeah. And interesting fact, I don't know if you know... I mean, you probably know about Tony Iommi's
fingers.
Fingers, yeah. Yeah, he's missing the tips of his fingers, mm-hmm. and so, you know, playing guitar was a rehab for him. But interestingly, the tension on his guitar strings were too high because he was playing in standard tuning. Mm-hmm. So I think he's one of the first metal musicians that downtuned like a whole 1.5 steps below. Mm-hmm. And that's why their sound sounds so dark and mm-hmm. gloomy and whatnot. And because, you know, to ease the tension on his
fingers.
On his fingers. But I think he plays well. Like, he's got like leather thimbles.
Yeah, we actually saw something. We saw a YouTube video recently, and he made them out of like leather straps and something else. Like, he actually made those himself to mm-hmm. get grip on the strings. And I was like, fuck. But yeah, he got it. And it's crazy because he worked in a metal shop.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's just so fucking crazy, like how things happen. And yeah, he was like in the, you know, he's part of the band that brought in metal. You know, and it's fucking crazy. But yeah, I love that album.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Even the artwork too. It looks kind of, to me, it looks just kind of creepy the way it is. It just, there's a lady and there's a house in the background, and I don't know. I fucking love that album. I love the artwork.
Yeah, no. And that's I think Sabbath to me. That's actually one of my favorite guitar tones. Tony Iommi's distortion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the right amount of heavy. It's just the right amount of dark. It's I don't know. There's something about it. The way he plays.
Mm-hmm. It's like a heavy fuzz.
It's like a heavy fuzz, yeah. And it's, I don't know, it's like, he's not overdoing it. He's just playing. Maybe it's just the production, I don't know. It could also be his SGs that he plays. I think he exclusively plays SGs,
yeah,
he, right?
Yeah, I don't think I've, yeah, he's never, I don't, I've never seen him use any other type of guitar, but yeah.
No, so, yeah, I think his guitar, his SG guitar definitely has something to do with the tone.
Yeah.
Plus also too, just
same thing with Angus Young.
Yeah.
And his SG. Yeah. There's,
yeah.
Yeah.
There's,
yeah. But, all right. That's my number 8. I don't know.
Cool.
Can't all say right, anything so else about that.
We're moving on to number 7, right?
Oh yes. That's right. You're the leader.
Okay. Do you want to go?
No, it's okay. Go ahead. I have the workings of a list, and I'll probably piggyback off a couple of yours. Cool. But,
yeah, go for it. Because that's what I did with hers and her Johnny Pool one. Because yeah,
cool. All right. So my number 7 is a Scottish dream pop band, Cocktail Twins.
Holy crap, Frank! There's like a whole bunch of stuff that I'm learning. Like I didn't think that I was gonna be learning this much because I know you guys listen to a lot of stuff. But yeah, go for it.
And
Cocktail Twins. Basic. Yeah.
No. I mean, everyone's got their taste and whatnot. But yeah, Cocktail Twins. Scottish trio, dream pop, and their album Treasure. And I think for a lot of bands, their make or break is their third album, and your career is pretty much contingent upon that third album. And with Treasure, Cocktail Twins were on everyone's radar. And initially, the band was not pleased with the end result of that album. They called it an abortion. They called it trash. They just didn't want anything to do with it. But I think over the years, as the album grew in popularity, their original thoughts on that changed. And so, you know, I think it definitely made them reconsider. And to me, the music sounds like, you know, if you could associate heaven having a sound, that's what it would sound like. And
I imagine Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that too.
That was a reference to This Is the End, if you guys have seen the movie. But
it's got to do a lot with the guitar work. It's very, very ethereal, very dreamy, very soundscapey.
And the singer's voice.
The singer, also. Yeah, the singer's voice.
And the fact that it's not actually in a real language, right? The lyrics are in kind of a made up language, so it's not, I don't know, I think there's something about that because your brain isn't making connections with the words, so you just hear the sound of it, which is unique.
Yeah, that is interesting. So he's just basically using like syllables, I guess, with melody?
Pretty much, yeah. Like
that's crazy.
The way the vocals were done, it's, I mean, I don't know, I'm gonna know, it's been labeled as mouth music because you're not actually forming words, you're just just making consonants and vowels and whatnot, and trying to piece it out with the.
You know, it's crazy. There's a lot of lyricists or vocalists. I should say vocalists that do that. Like when they're mm-hmm. trying to write a song and they don't have the words, they'll do that first. James mm-hmm. from Metallica does that. He'll just make
like a sing, like
make
just
random
sing like a melody or something.
Yeah,
like,
or, yeah. Or noises mm-hmm. and syllables until and then come up with the words later. Yeah. But that's interesting. I just hadn't heard anything that was completed that way.
And I don't know if it's like traditional Gaelic. Scottish is Gaelic, right? I don't know if it's traditional Gaelic vocal music mixed in with whatever is going on. Yeah. But I mean, just the way the guitars are being played and the way the vocals are being sung over the guitars, it's a very otherworldly album mm-hmm. to me. And I feel like it's on a whole other level, on a whole other out of body level. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I really cannot think of another perfect example of dream pop. And I feel like when you go to bed and when you dream like a really nice, sweet dream, that's what their music is, what those dreams sound like.
Huh. Have you ever seen them live?
No, actually, I think they've broken up like a long time ago.
Oh, really? How old is that album?
I think it was released in 84.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But they broke up and the members went off and did other stuff. Yeah. But, you know, I think a lot of what they played in Cocteau Twins carries over into their other projects. And if you like very, like I said, you know, very dreamy, soundscapey, instrumental stuff, the type of stuff that you would probably listen to at a spa maybe mm-hmm. or something. I don't know. But it's very good. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that, you know, you just got to listen to it.
Yeah.
It's
very unique.
Yeah. It sounds like it, like based off of your description, like I've never really heard anything like that before. So it sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. Cool. You're number seven? Yeah. Number seven.
So it makes me sad that this one is kind of low on my list. But that doesn't mean that I don't love it any more or less than anything else on my list. It's CKY's Rise of the Phoenix. I love Chad Ginsburg. Hi, Chad. Shout out, Chad. You can find me at... Just kidding. but that album is one of those that I can listen to it forwards and backwards and just all day, every day if I had to or if I, you know, or just because... I really enjoy it. Has a lot of good guitar on it. I love it. I love Chad's voice. That album actually is what got Mario and I back in touch with each other. Cause he like messaged me on Facebook about like me playing drums and stuff with my band. And then we started talking about CKY because he was actually had seen them or was about to see them live. And then I was going to see them on the Him Farewell Tour, which we'll get to him later. but yeah, I love the album. It's newer, 2017, but it doesn't mean that it's, you know, a lot of these albums are kind of on my list are a little bit newer, I'd say. But I really enjoy that one. So
yeah. I think a lot of people associate CKY with Jackass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, because I mean, they're featured heavily on a lot of Jackass episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Jess Margera, Bam Margera's brother, is the drummer. So I guess he did a lot of the music for those early, that band did a lot of the music for their early, like, Can't Kill Yourself videos, which I don't know if anybody's ever seen any of those. They're kind of just like Jackass, but they were a little bit more, I think extreme. They're pretty fun. And they had the skate sessions in them, which I really enjoyed. I don't know. That was just like me back in the day. Like, I love that. Shit, back in high school, I tried riding a skateboard for a moment there and stuff. But yeah.
So that's actually a good one to go off of. And that one is on my list. So I'm going to go ahead and rearrange my list right now. So on my list, I had CKY's Infiltrate the Story Rebuild. That was their second album. And I actually had Rise of the Phoenix on my honorable mentions list. But then I decided to switch it for a reason I'm going to get into right now. So I think Chad, you love Chad, of course. You love his vocals, blah, blah, blah. I've seen you guys talk to each other on Twitter. So he is a very underrated guitarist, I think. I don't think a lot of people pay attention to him. I don't know why or... you know, how that happened, or maybe because of, you know, his association with Jackass and people don't really pay attention to the band the way they should. But I think that band and him as a guitarist is very underrated. His guitar work is very, it's intricate. It's not just bar chords. It's not just standard punk, you know.
Right.
It's very melodic, and it's very, it doesn't sound like, whenever they do a track, it doesn't sound like another track. Everything sounds different. And everything's very catchy. I mean, so I actually bumped off Infiltrate, Destroy, Rebuild, because Rise of the Phoenix was actually the first album with Chad on vocals. They parted ways with Darren Miller, who did vocals on their first four albums. The funny thing about that, actually, I don't know if you remember this. This was before we went on tour, air quotes. So Darren Miller, when he left CKY, he created another band called Mecha CKY, which was kind of a...
Yeah, you mentioned...
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember this situation. So it was kind of a reference to Mecha Godzilla. So Godzilla, okay. And then there was Mecha Godzilla, whatever. So he made Mecha CKY, and according to copyright or whatever, he couldn't use the name Mecha CKY. So he ended up naming the band 96 Bitter Beans, which is actually named after a song by CKY called 96 Bitter Beans. Right. Bitter Beans. So when Darren left, he was making an album, and he had a crowd, what's it called? A crowdfunding thingy?
Yeah, crowdfunding.
That's what it's called, right?
Crowdfunding?
Crowdsourcing?
Yeah. So he had one of those things to make his new album where people would donate money, different tiers. You can get like your name on the booklet, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, I'm going to pay and have my name on the booklet. So I paid, have my name on the booklet, you know, donate to the band to record their album, because I don't think they were on a label at the time. And so there was another tier they had where for a certain amount of money, you could send them your song and they would record it for you. And I told Frank, I go, dude, I go, I want to do this. I fucking love CKY. But this wasn't CKY. This was Darren Miller's version. So basically, if I'm going to come back to this later, but there's actually two versions of CKY happening right now, which is CKY with Chad singing right now. And then there's CKY with, I didn't know that they were still doing shows. They actually just played a show here in San Antonio or here in Texas recently, earlier this year before COVID. And they're playing.
Yeah.
Not the same set, but they're the same songs from previous albums. So it's two different CKY sets from two different bands. Well, one CKY, but with, it's fucking crazy. Yeah. So I guess it has to do with whoever wrote the songs or whatever. But anyways, so I donated whatever, and me and Frank decided, you know, that we shouldn't spend the money on that. I think we were going to go on tour at the time, because this was right before we left on that first tour. And so I ended up not doing it, and so I was, like, so fucking excited. I was like, yeah, you know, I contributed to Darren Miller, you know, making this new album, and I just love both versions of CKY. Well, I never got the fucking album. I never fucking got it, and it pissed me off. Like, I waited literally 2 years for that fucking album, and I never received it. Damn. I never got a message. Like, I never fucking anything, and so I got kind of a beef with him. So I never fucking got it. Like, and I moved too, but I had a change of address, and I never fucking got it. And I never saw anything posted about the album. I actually just maybe last week heard, I don't know if this is the same album, but they have an album called Camp Pain. And I was listening to it, and I kind of got bored after a while, because he's very metal influenced. He has another band called World Under Blood, if you like death metal or like speed metal.
Okay.
I shouldn't say speed metal. It's probably death metal, but it's actually pretty good. It's like CKY vocals, but with metal. And I didn't know that when they played live, he actually would have like more aggressive vocals than he does on the album versions. But yeah, so Infiltrate, Destroy, Rebuild with Darren's vocals got knocked off for CKY's Rise of the Phoenix, which came out. And I actually got a chance to meet him on one of the last Warp tours. I met Chad, and I met Jess, and I met the bass player. God, Matt Diaz. I met Matt Diaz.
He's not in the band anymore.
He's not in the band anymore, yeah, but he was in the band at the time.
So, Chad, if you need a bass player.
Yeah.
You got your
but so, yeah, so CKY, Rise of the Phoenix, that's my number seven since I switched.
So I guess you're one of those 96 Bitter Beans?
Yes, I am. No, I'm not. No, I'm not, because that's Darren. You know, it's so fucking weird that you say that, because Darren Miller's band is named 96 Bitter Beans off of the CKY song. Right. And that's like one of their main songs. And even fucking Chad plays that song when CKY is playing live now. So it's weird, because it's like you're hearing two versions of the same song.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's very interesting. I don't know how the copyright and shit works.
I don't
or
know,
whatever.
Because, I mean, there's Danzig and Misfits.
Yeah, you know, but you see,
there's like that whole thing.
Well, that's true, but Danzig doesn't play Misfits songs, does he?
I don't think he does, but he doesn't like that. Well, I mean, now that the Misfits are reunited, I mean, it's probably no big deal to him. But back when he was doing Danzig, he wasn't cool with the other Misfit dudes playing Misfit songs because he felt like he owned rights to the name.
Yeah, I heard, you know? Yeah.
So it's just messy.
Yeah, it is, but I guess we'll get to Misfits sometime soon. Misfits actually could have possibly made it on my list, but nothing with Danzig on it. I actually prefer Michael Graves' vocals
over. I haven't heard much of Michael Graves' stuff. Like with Misfits,
his stuff is pretty good. I mean, Danzig's stuff is good. Those first two albums, if I'm correct, or was it just the one? I think it's two. Walk Among Us and or the other one was a EP, I think. Mm-hmm. But anyways, but yeah. Number six.
So number six for me is going to be Joy Division, their album Closer. And I feel like this album was eclipsed by the super, super immense popularity of their debut album, Unknown Pleasures. And it doesn't get the attention that I think it truly deserves. And actually, you know, for speech class last semester, I wrote a 10-piece speech on their debut album just mm-hmm. to show you the relevance of the album. But I think Closer is the better of the two albums that the band recorded, actually. And for me, I really like those type of underdog albums that don't get the attention that mm-hmm. that they deserve. And I feel like it has an untouchable quality to it. And, you know, when people finally get around to listening to it, it's like, well, now you're just discovering, like, why it's so good, you know? Mm-hmm. And singer Ian Curtis, you know, he ended his life 2 months before the album was released. And right before the band was about to embark on their first U.S. tour. And I think, you know, the album being his bit of a swan song, whether he knew he was going to end his life or not, just the fact that it was like his last recorded material is what adds like that chilling, haunting factor to it. And it's probably why, you know, I hold it dear to me. And I mean, there really is no denying that I think this album would have really catapulted the band, you know, up, mm-hmm. up, you know, to the big time, especially since they were crossing over into the US market and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their producer, Martin Hannett, who's, if you ever listen to Martin Hannett's work, just his production work is super fucking, like, he's a madman in the studio. Like, he'll do anything and everything to get, like, the absolute best performance mm-hmm. of a band. A lot of times altering the sound of the band to really capture the moment of it.
Rick Rubin,
yeah. I mean, I've heard he's, like, a crazy dude and whatnot. But, yeah, so, I mean, the way Martin Hannett produced this album, I think it really, at the time, Manchester was a very disenfranchised, very disillusioned city. And if that had a sound, that's the sound that Closer is.
What year was that?
This came out in 1980.
Okay.
Yeah. So 2 months before, mm-hmm. You know, Ian Curtis, you know, killed himself. Yeah. And then, you know, and it was a big thing because people were excited to have Joy Division finally arrive into the American market. Mm-hmm. It never happened. You've probably heard of the band New Order.
Mm-hmm.
So New Order is pretty much a continuation of Joy Division. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, the three original dudes, the other guys, and they, you know, they carried on, you know, the sound changed a lot. They went more new wavy, a little more punk. But they just didn't carry on with the name. They just thought, you know, we're a whole new band now. Let's just carry on as we are. So,
yeah, I think a lot of the times when that happens, when the band's not, I guess, fully established, it's better to do that. Cause then you run the risk of people saying like, oh, well, this isn't what we, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this isn't this band. This is another guy. I mean, it happened with, who was it? I guess, oh my God, Stone Temple Pilots. I mean, but they were around for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, when the new singer came in, everyone's all like, this isn't fucking Stone Temple Pilots. Like, or might Alice as well just... Yeah, Alice in Chains, that's another band too. Mm-hmm. Might as well change, you know, start over. I mean, you're going to have the same sound, but I mean, start with a new... You know what I mean? People know who you are, and they know what happened.
Right.
But yeah, I mean...
So speaking of switching singers, I was just thinking of AC/DC.
Yeah.
And was it Bon Scott?
Yeah.
Their singer?
Mm-hmm. No, Brian Johnson.
Yeah, Brian Johnson. Yeah, Bon Scott was the original.
Yeah, original singer.
But that, you know, that was another thing was, you know, at the time when Brian Johnson joined the band, AC/DC already had a following. So, and people are always very, very hesitant when the new singer steps in. I mean, but it actually made them more famous. You know? And then, you know, I think he had to stop touring because he was having, I think, hearing problems. And then Axl Rose stepped in for him.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. Was there ever talk about them recording an album with Axl Rose? Or?
I don't know. It's best that doesn't happen.
Yeah. So at that time, didn't Axl Rose have like a broken leg?
Yeah, he did have a broken. Yeah, I think. Yeah. So, I don't know. Fucking. No.
He's not on your top 10?
No. Yes. Chinese democracy.
Oh, no, yeah. That's good stuff.
So my number 6 is going to be Kitty Spit. This was 2000. Early 2000s, 2000 to early 2000s. It was around that time where my music tastes were kind of evolving from the pop stuff into rock and discovering this whole new world of music that I wasn't really familiar with. And it was the first time I had ever seen girls that were playing instruments, and they were, you know, just everything that I aspired to be, and still to this day, the Lander sisters are still kicking ass in the music industry and doing other projects that aren't just Kitty. But they embodied like that powerful, like, F you, we're girls, we can do it too, we can do it better, we can do it harder. And that album's just really raw. You can hear how it wasn't overproduced or anything. It was just girls just playing their instruments and really feeling it, getting into it. Morgan Lander. Okay. So I don't like a lot of female vocalists. I cannot stand female vocalists. I don't like a lot of them.
What about Britney?
Except Britney.
I think she means rock vocalists.
Yeah, rock. I don't like a lot of rock female vocalists. There's only two that I can really talk that I love. Others I'll tolerate, which would be Morgan Lander and then Christina Scabbia from Lacuna Coil. Those are the only two female vocalists that I am, rock female vocalists that I am just like, they get it. They do it. Anytime another female vocalist screams, I think they're trying too hard. It doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound natural. But Morgan Lander, she nails it. She nails it every time. Her voice is so unique in the notes that she hits when she's singing in her regular singing voice. And then when she screams, it doesn't sound like she's trying too hard. It just comes so natural to her. And these girls, they were a little bit older than me at that age where I was in middle school. They were probably like early high school to middle high school. But they were just like, I just thought they were the coolest things ever. I still do. I thought like they dressed the way that I wanted to. They looked the way they wanted to. They had the F you attitude. They did whatever. And they just kind of embodied everything that I kind of liked. And I just admired them.
And the interesting thing too, like if you like watching documentaries, I know we all do, like documentaries, especially music documentaries, the Kitty Origins Evolutions documentary is actually a really good one to watch. It talks about like how they started, how the sisters started playing music. And it also like shows like where the FU came from, like to the boys, like when they first started the band. It's just very interesting to see like where bands started, like where their origins were from. And when you see this documentary, you're like, oh shit, like I didn't know that. And it just puts more, you see more of the rawness like in their, how they made the band and how it like translated into the music. But yeah, that's a good album. Yeah. Did you have anything else to say? No. Okay. So my number 6, this one, I guess it's another one that probably people wouldn't think that I would have on my list, but it's one of my fucking favorites. It came out the year that Kim and I graduated. It came out 666. Hail Satan. This is AFI's December Underground. I fucking love AFI. There's maybe like one album here and there that I'm like not too fond of, but this one pretty much came off the success of Sing the Sorrow. It was a follow-up, and Sing the Sorrow had fairly good amount of, you know, good reception when it came out, and it's a good album. They had good mainstream success with that too, but December Underground was one of those albums that it's beginning to end. It tells a story. It's complete. It's like a concept album, even though they wouldn't consider it one. And it's the sound is different. So like you still have that This one's probably an exception on my list because it's not as raw as the other ones. This one, they went a little bit more into their electronic side, more specifically Davey and Jade, because if anyone knows AFI, they also have a side project called Black Audio, where it's like 80s electronic music. If you've never heard it, it's good stuff. Mm-hmm. I think they have like 3 or 4 albums out. I want to say 4, because Davey is actually really influenced by like 80s electronic music. But if his voice goes perfect with that 80s, mm-hmm. and I know you guys love that stuff, but if yeah. If anything, check out like the first album and the last album they came out with.
I think I've heard the first album only.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But December Underground was one of those where it started coming out in the AFI music, and the production was a little bit more than their previous albums. It still had the punk sound, but it had electronic elements to it. And I just fucking love that album. Beginning to end, I remember, I think there was a period of time where I just listened to that fucking album every day, like at least once every day. That album, I actually have a huge collection of it. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, but I have multiple versions of it on CD. I have the vinyl. I have a little box set with like that was like an import that has like bonus tracks on it. It's a little I always forget what they're called. Little fucking smaller vinyl.
The 45s.
45s, yeah. It's a 45 box set. I actually had 2 copies of it. I think I gave one to my sister. The only thing that I'm missing in my December Underground collection, because I think I have all the B-sides to it that came out on singles and stuff, is this is probably not my least favorite track on it, but not the one that shows the maturity of the album, is Miss Murder, the single. I know everyone's heard that song. So that single, they actually had an alternate version. I think it was like a UK radio edit. I can't find it. I've only seen it once on eBay. I could never find it again. Basically, the bridge is altered. But it's not altered. It's like an alternate bridge. So the bridge that we have on the regular US album, the one that we heard on the radio, there's actually another bridge that exists, and it's only on that single. Okay. They only played it once. Not once. They played it a few times here when it was released. This was when our radio... We'll have another episode about that too. Radio stations. Radio station actually played it, and they played that version. And I only remember hearing it literally twice. And that's the only thing I'm missing from that, from my collection of that album, is that B-side, which is that single with an alternate bridge. Okay. So the bridge is totally different. But yeah, AFI's December Underground. I fucking love that album.
That was the first AFI album that I owned. Remember LimeWire?
Yeah, remember LimeWire, yeah.
I fucking ripped that shit. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so LimeWire was great, dude.
I fucking, yeah, that, I you know, I never really got into that file sharing stuff. Like, I had friends who, I had a couple, literally a couple of mix CDs that I had on, like, you know, let me have this. Can I have this song? Can I have this song? But then everything that I had, I would go out and buy a physical copy. So.
And but for me, the whole LimeWire thing wasn't specifically to, rip off an artist. But the reason why I went to LimeWire originally was because a lot of bootleg concerts were uploaded to there. So I thought, okay, I can download a Perfect Circle San Antonio performance into my computer, or I can download this performance into my computer, pretty much. But then people just started uploading, just regular studio albums. And I was like, I'm not really cool with it.
That's actually my last resort, too, when I'm looking for B-sides. This song actually don't have the B-side downloaded. But back when iTunes was still around, before they shut it down, my old laptop before it broke. I had some B-sides from some bands too that I just couldn't find, that they were either UK releases that were just so rare you couldn't fucking find them. But I literally had maybe 3 that were like 3 songs out of my like in fucking huge collection on iTunes that were like downloaded from file sharing sites. But if I can find it and hunt it down, I will find it. But that's one. If anyone has any, insight on where I can get that damn Miss Murder single, hit me up, because that's the only thing I need for my December Underground collection, because I need that.
I'm going to have to do the British eBay.
I've even looked on the like Australian sites, and I cannot find it at all. It's so hard to find. Yeah, I've only seen it once, and I was like, oh, I'll get it later. This was legit maybe 8 years ago, and I haven't seen it again.
I think it's safe to say next time you see it, just buy it.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. All right, number 5.
Number 5, for me, it's a German electronic band Kraftwerk. And
Every time you start off with a genre, I'm like, what is he going to say? but then you say it, I'm like, okay, I know who they are. Okay.
Yeah, so Kraftwerk and their album Tour de France. Personally, I'm very selective of electronic music. It needs to hit me the same way that traditional drum and bass and guitar music does. And this album does that for me. And also because cycling is a big part of my identity. Like, this album is just like an automatic no-brainer. It was intended to be released in time for the 1983 Tour de France. And Kraftwerk got super involved in the making of this album, that they all became vegetarians and they all took up cycling to really get in the spirit of making the album. And singer Ralph Hütter actually took his enthusiasm for cycling further when the band was on tour by having the band's tour bus drop him off 100 miles from the next venue, and he would ride his bike the rest of the way. And I think this commitment and dedication to the music is what makes the album a very meaningful one for me.
Sweet.
And they just lost one of their members, right?
Recently, a couple weeks back. I think it was throat cancer?
Yeah,
I think it just hit him very aggressively.
Have you ever seen him live?
Live, yeah, once. My old job, my manager got me a ticket to see them, and it was a 3D show. So, you know, you had the 3D glasses on.
What the hell?
It was really cool. A lot of the, they had, you know, their setup was very, very simple. They just had one simple screen behind them and like their four keyboard stands.
Yeah.
And then the band just came out, started doing their thing. You put your glasses on and shit from the screen just starts flying at you. So you'll see a train coming your way, or you'll see something else coming your way. And it was amazing. It was a good show. And they were actually on tour recently, but then, you know, COVID happened, and I don't know. I feel like if I see them again, it's definitely gonna have, like, I'm definitely gonna have to see them, because these dudes are in their 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like it's might just be the last time you ever see them. Yeah. You know?
It kinda sucked, like, you speaking about COVID, and that, like, Kim and I, one of the bands that I wanted to see that was on our list of bands to see live was Silver Sun Pickups. I love Silver Sun Pickups.
Right.
Actually,
right.
I don't know if one of their albums is on my one of their albums is one of the ones that didn't make my list. But we were supposed to see them in Austin in March.
But I may or may not
have had COVID before. So, well, it's weird because she was sick and we didn't know. This was before COVID happened, and she was sick and we didn't know what was wrong with her. And this was when the weather was really weird. Like, it was still cold. It was rainy. And so we were looking forward to the concert, and I was like, you know what? I was like, you're sick. And it was going to be at Stubbs in Austin. Mm-hmm. And it was outside. And I was like, I don't want you sick outside. I don't know who else is going
to
be sick.
And now we regret it, because who knows when we'll be able to go to
the show. Yeah, so we ended up...
You should just let me suffer.
So we ended up not going to that show. And then COVID happened, and we're all like, son of a bitch.
I don't think I had COVID, though, guys. I think I went to the gym, public gym. And I usually don't do that. And the next day I was sick. It may or may not have been COVID, but I'm going to say I got sick.
Yeah, so.
But if you say you had COVID, it gives you street cred.
Okay, well.
That's true. What number was that?
That was 5.
So you're number 5, right?
Single, yeah. Okay. My number 5 album is the Hymn Razorblade Romance album. That was about 99, 2000, but I didn't discover that album or him until about 2003. I love Via Valo's voice, and I just think it's so soothing, kind of. I used to fall asleep to that album back in the day. I just thought his voice was just so soothing. It has a good mix of fast songs and those slow songs, # love metal. It's love metal. The genre. Genre is love metal. I really love that album. And I'm sure we'll talk about this on another time, but the first time I saw him was at a Project Revolution tour. I don't remember what year.
That was Linkin Park's tour, right?
I was looking forward to seeing him, but this was pre-sober Veal Valo, and I was so disappointed. I was just heartbroken after that performance. But then, fast go fast forward more years backwards. I don't know because we're in the future now. But I got to see them on their farewell tour in Dallas, and I was so happy. He was sober.
With CKY.
With CKY, yes. Yeah, so that was awesome too because it was both of those bands which I love. And I was so stoked because my favorite song on that album is Razorblade Kiss. And that was one of the songs that was kind of on and off of their set list during that tour. And they played it at that show. That was one of the shows that they played on. I was so excited. I was so happy. He totally redeemed himself. And so, yeah, him's Razorblade Romance album is my number 5.
Wow. Did that show that you saw the farewell, was there a band that opened called Three Teeth?
Yes.
You remember? Yes. Okay. I've been wanting to see Three Teeth for so long. But life happens, I guess. I think I've mentioned them to you. Mm-hmm. They're like this industrial metal band that I've been really into for some time. And yeah.
I don't remember. I was just stoked about CKY.
Yeah, no, of course.
But they did open. They were pretty good. As far as I can remember, they were pretty good. But yeah, they were on that tour with them. And I was so stoked because they're not together anymore. I know that I saw recently Veal's doing something else. I think he's kind of dabbling into music again. But yeah, we'll have to see what he puts out. I'm looking forward to it because his voice is just, I don't know, it's just so calming to me. It's great.
Cool.
I mean, it's an acquired taste because you were
I don't, for some reason, I don't like his voice, but there are certain songs, like, it was so weird. I was listening to CKY at work, and so obviously him is associated with CKY. Yeah. So I'm listening to it, and then, like, randomly I'm hearing these hymn songs that I've never heard before, and they sounded really good, but then there's some that I hear, and I'm like, oh, man, I can't get into his voice. And
I even have a Heartagram tattoo.
Yeah.
That's where that came from. That was, I think a lot of hymn fans have their Heartagram tattoo, those diehard.
Yeah, I think I knew about the tattoo and stuff, like, well, the fans and stuff. Of course, obviously, I know about your tattoo. For those of you who don't know, she's my wife. So so my number, what is it? Because my list got shuffled around. 5. Okay, so my number 5 is going to go back to my metalhead, side, which is what I am. Devil Driver, their self-titled debut album, Devil Driver. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Devil Driver, Dez Fafara, he was a vocalist for Coal Chamber back in the nu metal days. Devil Driver, I fucking love this album. So this album is so interesting to me because it's groove metal. I don't know if anyone knows what groove metal is, but groove metal is just real, like,
ideally, ideally, but Pantera plays groove metal.
Yeah, it's like Pantera. It's basically like an evolved version of what Pantera would be, or a more updated version. And the interesting thing about Devil Driver is I actually have, I think, one of their albums I have, it's a special edition that comes with a DVD documentary. And I think this was the second or third album, but it's a documentary on how the band came together and how the first album came together. So when they originally started the band, the interesting thing is, because you were talking about Papa Roach, I think, having a... Yeah, because they were like ska, I think, in the beginning, now that I think about it.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So this Devil Driver, when they first started, they were actually going to be like a psychobilly band. They actually had a stand-up bass player in the band. So when they're recording these metal songs, they had a stand-up bass player in, but the music was so fast that the stand-up bass player couldn't keep up with the bass lines. So they had to get a real bass player, like a standard bass player. Oh, okay. And it was just really fucking interesting because, like, you wouldn't think, like, because I was lucky enough to see them once because I wanted to see them for the longest time, and I saw them, I think, 3 years ago.
That's funny. I think you or Frank actually gave me a burned Devil Driver.
That was actually my CD, but I don't know who gave it to you because I must have. So this was back when. You still have it. So this was back when, like, people would pass around burnt CDs, and I had Devil Driver, and I don't know if I lend it to Frank, or I don't know if I give it to you directly, but it floated around and she got it. But it's my writing because I used to write, because I used to, like, do stuff on the CDs, I used to doodle on them. So this album came out in 2003. So if you're a metal fan, and, you know, of course, then you know who Devil Driver is. If not, and you're a Pantera fan, I would suggest you listen to this album. Because Dez, if you follow Coal Chamber's history, you know that there was always a lot of issues in the band and people not getting along. And I think Dez was one of the issues, even though, he says he wasn't. But
I don't know how true this is, but he's supposedly, like, a really big diva.
Yeah, well, right, or... when I see the documentary, yeah, you can see that too. But he likes mm-hmm. to take control of things. But it's crazy because, like, guitarists left and their sound kind of evolved to more... It wasn't as groovy as that was those first two albums, which is why I really like that. It's raw. There's not a lot of guitars going on. You got two guitars. That's it. Bass. It's not like a lot of intros and stuff. It's just the songs going in, out, boom. Just like Pantera. But then when you go later on to the later Devil Driver albums, it's more produced. You have more intros. You have more like your traditional, I guess, death metal intro where it's like a clean intro that builds up to like heavy. Mm-hmm. Whereas to this Devil Driver stuff is just boom, heavy, heavy, but it's groove. Like you can actually like you can groove to it like legit. Like that's right, why it's called groove metal. But yeah, that's my number five, Devil Driver's self-titled album from 2003.
Cool. All right, so I guess we're on number four now.
Yes.
And my number four is another Scottish band. Actually, I think they're Irish. I'm not sure. My Bloody Valentine.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. And their second album, Loveless. I used, you know, prior to Loveless, I used to listen to music in a very tunnel vision sense. And then My Bloody Valentine entered my life and pretty much blew everything away. Guitarist Kevin Shields is playing. To me, it's got a very androgynous sound. It mixes loud, masculine energy with feminine qualities. And to me, the music is like, it's like you're in this dreamlike state during like a sensory deprivation type environment.
And that's very descriptive. Like I'm trying to like see Brit too. Like
so, just imagine yourself in a sensory deprivation tank, and the waves of the guitar are just like carrying you through, pretty much. And it's almost as if Shields invented a whole new genre within the shoegaze and post-punk scene, and I think when you welcome a new approach to your playing, I mean, it doesn't matter what you listen to,
yeah.
But when you no longer stick to a traditional sense of playing because of the music mm-hmm. you're listening to, you stick with it. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, Kevin Shields' guitar playing was what really made me reconsider my approach to guitar playing, which is, I don't know. Like, I've often been told, oh, you play guitar this way, you play guitar that mm-hmm. way. Like, who are your influences? And it's like, it's not who you would expect.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
So this is what that album did for me. It really made me reconsider my approach to guitar playing.
And I think people could see, like, based off of yours and my list, like, we were in a band together, two bands together, playing the same type of music. And our first bands were me and you writing music together.
Right.
Playing, and our lists are completely different. But yet we were playing the same type of music. So yeah, that shows a lot. Like, yeah. And there's a lot of guitarists like that too. I think we were watching an interview with Jim Root from Slipknot, and he was just naming all these bands that I don't listen to, and they're just like more mellow, but I mean, those are his influences, and you come out and it's Slipknot, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying they're the heaviest, but it's just his the bands that he was listening to just was a total difference, you know, from what Slipknot music is.
Right.
But yeah, no. I think those are the best musicians because they're not stuck in one mindset, and that's when you don't get the cookie cutter stuff
right, exactly.
of bands sounding like bands. But yeah, no, it's good to listen to stuff outside of your comfort zone and draw experiences from other stuff. Kim's number four.
Okay, my number four is Bad Sons, Language and Perspective. So that came out in about 2014, and I didn't discover them up until 2017 when I heard a song from their album Disappear Here on the Forza Horizon 3 video game. It was tough picking between the two albums because I can listen to both of those albums just over and over again. I think there was a period of time in 2017 where I listened to both of those albums all day, every day. I worked receptionist at a floor store and I would just listen to that just all the time. So I had a hard time choosing. However, I think their first album, Language and Perspective, kind of beats out Disappear Here. Disappear Here is still really great, but Language and Perspective is my fave. It's just a great feel good album. All their songs are just so feel good. Like the guitar is just so like funky and fun and,
Christo's vocals are just, they're really good. Like, he can hit some of those notes, and he has, you know, the lows and the highs, and he's just, I think he's outstanding. I've seen them live probably 3 times between here and Austin, and they put on a great show. We went, I think, last year and saw them in Austin at Emo's. And man, that show was wild. Like, they were touring their new album, their newest album. But man, their old songs, they just hit so much harder than the new stuff. And they're just great feel good songs. That album, Language and Perspective, is really, really good. It's one of my tops. But like I said, I didn't want to double do anybody on band wise on my list. So their album Disappear Here is on my honorable mentions.
Yeah. And like, that's one of those bands too, where they're like alternative. I guess they're alternative, but like, it's just good dance music. But they're a really fun
band. Check them out if you haven't heard them, because
they're from California, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I think they're from California.
If you just want that music that's like summer, it reminds me of summer and fun, and you're just hanging out, you're having a good time.
Kind of like your summer shandy.
Oh, yeah. Hey. But Language and Perspective.
If you like to listen to a good summer shandy, listen to Bad Sons. Cool. All right, so my number four, this one's probably going to be on your list, most likely. But I didn't know, I wasn't too familiar with this album until after we got together. So Third Eye Blind's self-titled album from 1997. That album is fucking great. Like, some people can say that the best alternative band of the 90s is Oasis, but it's not Oasis. It's Third Eye Blind.
They're still, like, bomb AF. Like, their new album, Screamer, if you haven't heard it,
it's actually, yeah,
it's great.
It's good.
Oh my god, it's so good.
So we actually,
is that the Red album?
Yeah, the self-titled one. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's okay. So I wasn't familiar with them aside before we got together, aside from their singles, Jumper,
Semi-Charmed
Life. But then, like, that album, it's so crazy, because when there's a lot of 90s alternative bands that I don't like. I like Matchbox 20, but I think they fall in this category that I'm about to talk about, is where, like, they were, their lyrics were kind of cheesy because it was the 90s, but
not everything,
but like a lot of these 90s bands, like, there's some bands that she listens to where I'm like, I don't like them.
Wow.
And it's
because, oh, what was it?
Not a lot of them. That woman, Gin Blossoms. You see, I don't like Gin Blossoms. For one, I don't like the guy's voice. Two, I don't like his lyrics. I just think they're lame. Straight out, I think they're lame.
They're frat boy rock.
Wow. That's what they are. Okay. Well, so.
I'm going to plug Summer Hits of the 90s on Pandora. Check it out. It's amazing.
Okay, so Third Eye Blind, back to this album. So this album, like, the lyrics are like, so you listen to it as like 90s alternative rock, right? But the lyrics are so dark. Like, they talk about suicide, drug abuse. Like, it's just so, like, it even talks about murder. Like, it's like, and it's not hidden. Like, you just have to pay attention.
Dirty little words to pretty little melodies.
Yeah, that's a good description. I don't know where you got that from, but that's a good description. But yeah, that album, I think
Stephen Jenkins has actually talked about their music and it being that, just that.
Well, that's a good description. That's what it is. Like, that album is really good, and we saw them. Unfortunately, we saw them right before.
It was a Screamer release party.
Yeah, but I mean, what was going on? It was
ACL.
So this was a show right before ACL, and unfortunately, the people who got to see them at ACL got to see their normal set with, like, you know, all the singles and stuff. Well, we saw them, and it was for the Screamer release, and so they played pretty much the whole Screamer album. So, like, the first half of their set was the first 6 songs off their album. And I was like, I want to hear Jumper. I was like, I want to hear Semi-Charmed Life, damn it. Like, I want to hear...
So, whenever COVID is over, I need me a Redemption Third Eye Blind show.
And luckily, though, one of my favorite songs, I think it's a B-side, I'm not sure, but... Because I don't think Slow Motion is on the...
It's on the Blue album, I think.
No, it's not. It's on... I think it's a B-side off of the self-titled.
Well, there's two versions.
That's right. Well, luckily we got to see they played Slow Motion on that, and they also played in the background. What was the name of that song? I'm sorry, I forget it.
Where?
Hold on.
The show?
No, that one.
They played
Wasn't it?
Narcolepsy.
Yeah, they played that one too. They played like I think 3 off of that. But anyways, I'm starting to ramble a little bit, but I'm starting to forget stuff, but yeah, so Third Eye Blind, self-titled from 97, that I fucking love that album, like from beginning to end. We listen to that album often. That's actually another album that I want to get on vinyl. Okay. That's a fucking great album. If you haven't listened to it all the way through, just for the lyricism too, it's an amazing album.
But you know, Fred Durst almost joined Third Eye Blind.
Oh, fuck no, I don't want to talk about it.
Tainted.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
It would have been Third Eye Biscuit.
No.
No, they
actually did a quarantine show that they broadcast on YouTube, probably a month ago or so. And oh my God, it was so awesome. They were all playing their instruments from different locations, but they were playing together at the same time. And I'm working in from home right now, and I had it on, and it was a dance party. I was here alone. I was working and I was just in it. And Stephen Jenkins was just killing it over here. And oh, that was really awesome. That was very clever and very cool. Like I enjoyed that really. Still not my redemption show, but I'll get one.
Okay. I'm just curious, Britt, what do you think was like the best like 90s alternative band?
That's tough, but one of my favorite probably is Alice in Chains.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, it's weird because like they are alternative, but like I would consider them more like alternative because I'm getting too technical. Metal. Yeah, like more in the grunge category. But no, it's cool.
Okay.
Gotcha. I was just curious to see where you fall on the 90s stuff.
I like the harder stuff. The harder stuff, yeah.
Well, this one, it's hard lyrically.
Okay.
So, I mean.
Poppy-ish, but.
It's not as poppy. I think if you pay attention to, if you let the singles dictate what, how can I explain it? Like, If you listen to the singles and you think, oh, this whole album's going to sound like that, because of course the labels are going to put out the stuff that's going to hit. The singles don't describe what the album is.
Okay.
But if you want to listen to something different, yeah, that self-titled album from Third Eye Blind is pretty good. Okay. But Frank, number three.
Number three. It's Depeche Mode's Ultra. And this is one of those special albums for me because Britt and I, we share an intimate connection with it. And also because it's very intensely dark, beautiful album. And it's very evocative. So every time I listen to it, it just pulls me in right away. And actually, you know, Depeche Mode were thought to be done right after they were done touring with Songs of Faith and Devotion. You know, there was a lot of heavy drug use, heavy alcohol use, a lot of internal band fighting, and then one of their key members left just due to frustrations. And actually, singer Dave Gahan died of a heroin overdose, but luckily he was brought back to life. And the band pushed on, and I think despite the album being underpromoted, you know, Ultra definitely deserves like a very, very good deep listen, and it's to me the sound of a band that has found new life, that's reinvigorated. It's basically them saying, you know, we're not going to let what happens break us up. We're going to keep going and we're going to keep at it. You know, this is our new voice and this is who we are. And, you know, 40 years later, they're still a band. So
they're still a good band. Mm-hmm. And Alan Wilder left. He was the only classically trained musician. And so when he was in the band, it was a lot more, I mean, you can tell the difference in sound before and after he left. The previous album, Songs of Faith and Devotion, there's like orchestra music and all kinds of like embellishments. It's really produced. And then Ultra is much simpler and it's much more electronic. And their first album without him. And so I think it was just, you know, I think everybody was kind of holding their breath waiting to see what was going to happen after. Like,
so,
what would
like it make? Lost a lot of technicality.
Yeah. It's somewhat simplified, but there's something really beautiful about it. And they definitely proved themselves and have done so many times over since then.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. Your number three.
My number three is going to be one of my favorite bands, Chevelle, Wonder What's Next. So everybody loves their debut album, Point Number One. I couldn't get into it. Sorry, Chevelle fans, Chevellians, whatever. But Wonder What's Next was, so 2002, I was entering high school. That was probably one of the first
rock albums aside from the Kitty and the Drowning Pool that I owned. Sam Loeffler is my favorite drummer. I feel like every time I listen to their music, I hear something different in his drumming. Like I hear something that I didn't hear before when I've listened to their songs countless times, but there's just so many intricacies that you can't hear them all on the first few times listening. But that album is really, really good. I like listening to it from start to finish. That was the baseline of my list, basically. That one's a really good one. It hurts me that it's at number three, but it's still really good, and they're my favorite. We actually got to meet them, but we'll talk about that probably another time.
Yeah, we'll have another show for
that. Which was, oh my God, awesome. But yeah, and that, so that, I don't really have a lot to say about it, unfortunately, but that's my number three.
Yeah, it's a good album. I think, I'm not sure, actually. Yeah, I have one of their albums on my,
Yeah, I have another one on my honorable mentions, because again, I didn't want to double a band. Yeah. This Type of Thinking.
Yeah, that's... This Type of Thinking was my on my honorable mention list. Yeah. Okay. So my number three. So for people that know me, they'll probably guess that I have an album from this band on my list, but not the one that you would think. So Metallica. I have a Metallica album on my list because I had to have a Metallica album on my list.
I called that. When we were driving over here, I was like, there's Metallica on his list.
So this one was tricky. This one's not going to be one that people probably would expect. This one's actually the soundtrack to their movie / live performance, whatever they want to call it. So this was Through the Never from 2013. So it was actually a movie. No, well, it was a live concert or live performance spliced together from two different shows, but they had a narrative put in between it so that it was a movie. But this one, it was kind of hard to pick one Metallica album, but this one goes all, this one has songs picked from Kill 'Em All through Death Magnetic. And the production on it is great. The mixing is great. The performance that they did it for these shows was fucking amazing. I actually saw the documentary or the behind the scenes for this show too. I actually saw this movie twice, or live concert, twice when it came out. I saw it once in IMAX and once in Real D. And one of the times, I don't remember if it was the IMAX or the Real D, Robert Trujillo actually came out and he was there in the theater with us, and he actually introduced the movie, and so that was fucking cool. So that was the second time that I got to be in the same room with Robert Trujillo, and we'll actually talk about that another time, because Kim and I last year got to actually go to the whiskey signing, the Metallica Blackened whiskey signing in Corpus. But we'll talk about that another time. But yeah, so Metallica Through the Never, that fucking is, like, to me, probably one of the definitive set lists that they could have put together. It's fucking great. Even the film itself is great. It's Metallica. I mean, I'm not saying they don't put out crap every once in a while, because they do. But this one, they fucking hit it. Like, and for an example, S&M was actually going to go on my list. The album they did with the San Francisco Symphony. But the disc two kind of loses some momentum from disc one. And then we actually, Kim and I and my brother actually saw S&M 2 in theaters. And I was really disappointed with that one. I think also, too, it had to do with the... There was something going on in the theater. I don't know what was going on, but their sound was off. And it just sounded horrible. But so, yeah, Metallica Through the Never is, number three on my list. I fucking love Metallica. But, yeah, I think that set list, that performance is fucking... It was on point.
This is probably an unpopular opinion, but I really like their Load and Reload albums.
They're good, but I don't, like, I kind of find myself skipping sometimes, like, through them. Through certain parts, I'll get bored, but, I mean, they're not bad. No, they're not bad. They're just...
I like them because, you know, it's not typical Metallica.
Well, because... You
know, like, to me, I mean, they went, like, a more hard rock, bluesy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because they have that background, and the thing is that when people think Metallica, they'll automatically think thrash and metal because of the albums that came before it, but they really do have a lot of hard rock background. And another one of my favorites too, that I don't think it was on either list, but Garage Incorporated is all covers, but could see, like, how they could harness, like, just the hard rockness, and just, like, they did such a good job on those fucking covers, like on that first disc, I mean. Because the second disc is like re-releases of covers they had done, I think like in the 80s. But that, yeah, I mean, they fucking, yeah, hard rock. They do a really good job doing hard rock when they're in the zone.
But yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's my unpopular opinion for, for that.
No, I mean, there's a lot of people, believe it or not, that still, I wouldn't say it's an unpopular opinion, but yeah, there's people that really do like Load and Reload. But yeah, that's my number three.
All right, so I guess we're going to number two.
Go ahead and do your two and number ones together.
Okay,
and cool. We'll do that.
Two and number one. Mm-hmm. I did that before I got here.
TMI.
Yeah.
It's
like 12 years old over here.
So my number two album is from The Cure, and the name of the album is Pornography. And I feel like it's... If you ever wanted to own a goth album, this is the only one you ever need to own. All others don't even matter. I mean, I think if you need a darkly depressing and nightmarish soundtrack, you know, Pornography is it. And it gives me absolute chills. And for me, it's like the literal sound of absence of light. While they were recording this album, you know, The Cure was on the brink of collapse, or a lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol and fighting, and it seemed like singer Robert Smith was super intent on just like offing himself. And I feel like Pornography captures the ugliness of what the band was experiencing. But through the turmoil, there's this bit of a rather, you know, a really morbid beauty that I think can't be ignored. And, you know, following this album, you know, The Cure went on to write some really it's incredibly poppy stuff, but you can still hear a lot of their dark side coming into this pop stuff. But, you know, Pornography is one of the most referenced albums, and despite them writing poppier songs and them winning over a lighter, larger audience, you know, I think this is one of those definitive albums that really defines a band. So, you know, it's very influential to me. And moving on to number one is Nine Inch Nails' The Fragile. And if anybody who knows me...
I knew that one was going to be on there.
Yeah, anybody who knows me knows that I'm like a super big Nine Inch Nails fan.
And I've seen them twice because of you. Like,
and this is a biased opinion, but I feel like they can do no wrong. You know, very biased opinion. you know, but I first got into Nine Inch Nails after seeing their 1999 VMA... their MTV VMA performance, and to me it was just this very raw and haunting and very punk in some way performance, given that it wasn't your typical awards show performance that you would expect. And I liked everything about the performance, and to me The Fragile is one of those absolute essential listens, and I think it's one of Trent Reznor's best works. And it's also pretty non-traditional to me. I mean, because one, it's a double disc album that's an hour and 45 minutes. And I think a lot of people's attention spans are not even, they can't, you know, sit for like 5 minutes without even listening to something. So that was a very adventurous thing to do. And two, the song deals with a lot of transpersonal issues, such as, you know, depression and angst, drug abuse, and the loss of his, grandmother. And I feel like a lot of these emotions challenge the listener to get out of their own head and feel something that's more intimate, something that's more real than they probably know. And the music, you know, throughout, it's profoundly moving. And I think this album, The Fragile, showcases a lot of what Nine Inch Nails can do. You know, they move past those expectations of, you know, and like I talked about earlier, the third album I feel really defines a band's career. And for them to put out a double disc 2 hour long album as their third album and whatnot, it really showed that they're not the typical band that's going to stay within their own genre, you know, within their own area. You know, they're going to break out, they're going to do what they want. And to this day, you know, Trent continues to prove that. You know, he brings all sorts of artists out on the road with him. He's experimented with hip hop, with, you know, soundtrack type sounding music. He's experimented, you know, he produces a lot of soundtracks and a lot of, he also branches out and he produces a lot of hip hop artists as well. And, you know, also too, he's a curator for Apple Music. And I mean, this dude's like done so much. There's really nothing that I can't say that he hasn't done that hasn't inspired me. So yeah, definitely Nine Inch Nails comes in at number one. I could probably go on hours and hours talking about the band. I mean, like that, they just mean so much to me. So
yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Now we can definitely do that, for other episodes, you know, just bands that influence us and stuff. But, no, man, that was a good list. Mm-hmm. And I already knew that those top two were going to be on there. Like, I wasn't sure what albums, cause I don't know, but like, I knew they were going to be on there.
Sure.
Kim, your top two.
My top two. My number two album is the Arctic Monkeys AM album. That was actually one of my first albums to own on vinyl, late to the party, because I barely got it like last year. They have albums before this one, but I don't know. There's just something about AM that's just so soothing and dreamy, but also Alex Turner's voice is just so just dreamy. Like, it's just very calm, and I don't really know how to explain it. He has kind of like that old timey classic clean voice. But that album is very good. I could listen to it, and I think there was a time where I did listen to it every day, over and over and over again. I can't get enough of that album. I love the way it sounds on vinyl, because it just puts that, with his dreamy, classically sounding voice and the sound of the vinyl on the record player, it sounds like you're in another time. Like you're in the past, like when those voices were more prominent, or the way that his voice sounds on that album. It just has this whole like vintage feel to it. I love that album. Number one, you probably guessed it, Third Eye Blind. Awesome. Self-titled album is my number one. I've probably drove Mario crazy, because I listen to that album all the time. I'll pop it in on when I'm working, in the car, just cleaning, doing whatever. Like, I'm listening to that album. I'm singing it at the top of my lungs. I'm dancing around. It's just my go-to.
I think that's what makes that album good, is that I don't get tired of it. And that's what makes good albums good mm-hmm. albums, is that you can't get tired of them. And that's one of them. That's why it's on my list, is I don't. So you listen to it, it doesn't bother me.
Oh, I'll listen to it. And I'm going to keep listening to it, because I just love it that much. It's a feel good. It's like you're driving in the car and you want to hear something that's fun, but like has, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. It's such a fun, free like album. And then, like you said, it has all these things that he's singing about that you wouldn't even think that he was, because you're just listening to the music and the melodies, and you want to dance and you want to sing it, even though he's talking about heroin. You know, Semi-Charmed is one of my favorite songs ever. So it's about heavily about drug use. And I love it, because it's so fun. Like, you don't even know that he's talking about that, because you're just so wrapped up in the music, the musicality of it. But that's my number one, and I actually kind of want to listen to it right now.
You can listen to it when we're done, because of copyright reasons. We'll probably get okay. So my number two is another one that's just not a throwaway, but it's just it's a fun album to listen to, and it came out, I guess, it was part of me growing up, I guess I should say. Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory from 2000. This is one of those albums where I don't think any other band was successful in doing what they did in crossing like hip hop mm-hmm. vocals with rock. Like, there really wasn't. When you come, like, now it's funny, I laugh. Bands like, if you like the band, that's fine, whatever. It's just my opinion. But Hollywood Undead, I think they tried to be the new Linkin Park, and there's other bands too that I can't even name because they didn't stick around. I think there was a band called Dead, I think DED, they tried to do it.
I don't know about them.
Yeah, so like Linkin Park, I think this album is like so timeless to me. Like, it's not dated. Like, you can listen to it and it doesn't sound like, it still sounds mm-hmm. good. Like, it doesn't sound like, oh shit, like this is like so 10 years ago. Like, no, you listen to it and it's like, oh shit, it's still like, No, go ahead.
However, when you watch the music videos.
Oh, yeah, the music videos are a different story.
Like, oh,
the
God.
Music videos, the technology will date it. But no, but I mean, and it's so crazy because like Mike Shinoda is one of those guys who was like influenced by hip hop, and he is a hip hop lyricist and vocalist, but yet he doesn't have that cliche hip hop vocalist sound when he's singing or when he's rapping. Like, he doesn't sound like he's trying to be a hip hop artist. He just is a hip hop artist. And I think he blended very well together with Chester. And that album still today, I can fucking listen to that album from beginning to end. Probably, like we were talking about the other day, I can probably skip crawling. But that album is just, it's a fucking good album. I think it was produced well too. It's raw, but at the same time, it has that production that it needed. I just fucking love that album. And then number one, so this one, of course, if you know me, then you know that that this band was on my list, but System of a Down's Toxicity. This one, when it comes to albums, I like for bands to keep their rawness when they come out. Of course, their debut album, their self-titled album, was very raw. Toxicity was raw as well too. It just took it up a little level without being overproduced. I like that it was political, because the first one wasn't really as political. Well, it didn't really have a lot of political hints.
It had some stuff.
But not as heavy as Toxicity. And actually, what was crazy was that this album influenced me heavily as a guitarist. This album got me into drop tuning. This is the tuning that me and you wrote music in and played.
That's right. It
was because of this album. And actually later on, and even now, if you look at my Instagram handle, and you look at the band that I had started, 8 years ago, it was called Version 7, and it was actually off of the lyrics of Toxicity, the opening line on Toxicity, Conversion Software Version 7.0. And, so I kind of got the name, but I also took it as people evolving, like people change and people, they grow. And Version 7 to me was like, okay, this is like where I'm at right now. And System of a Down was just, it was one of those influences that I didn't make it out there like, oh, I'm trying to sound like System of a Down, or oh, like System of a Down is my, was my influence. I wasn't trying to put it out there. It was just a subtle thing that I took that, I carried with me. And even now, like I said, if you look at my Instagram handle, it's MV7.0, and it's because that album was just such a big influence. Even if I don't have that displayed in the stuff that I'm writing now, it still influenced me. I think that album is fucking awesome. It was still raw. I think when you go on to Hypnotize and Mesmerize, they're a little bit more produced. They're not as raw as their first two albums. But Toxicity is probably, I fucking owned like three Toxicity shirts that I wore out till they fucking had holes in them. Like, I fucking love that album so much. But System of Down is my number one. Even if I had to rank everything, I think I'd have to put System of Down, Toxicity at number one.
Do you think they're gonna ever write a new album?
Fuck no. I don't know if, I mean, I don't want to get like into politics, but I don't know if you've kept up with it, because I have. So I've been literally holding my breath for a System of a Down album. Apparently John, the drummer, and Serge, they're not seeing eye to eye on politics right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a reason. Like, they're playing festivals, and they have festivals scheduled for next year, but they're not good. I don't think they're going to do an album.
But the same thing happened with Ramones. I mean, Joey and Johnny Ramone had both very different ideologies, and in fact they hated each other, but they were contractually obligated to.
But you see, I think with these guys, it's their contract was different, and they're not, they're like, well, we'll play shows together, but we won't. Because I actually just saw a report too that we know that Darren, the guitarist, Darren Malakian, he actually has scars on Broadway does. And then Serge has his his solo project, Serge, under his name. And then Shavo, I think, was doing some hip hop stuff, I think, with some guys from Wu-Tang. What the name of that project was called. But then I just read a report that said that, I guess Serge was tired of waiting, and he had stuff that was written that I think could have gone on Toxicity and could have gone on a new album. He's actually going to be releasing that music under his solo project. Yeah, so I guess any future stuff that we could have had is going to be coming out under Serge's name, not Darren's. But, that's my list. That was my stuff, and that was for everybody out there just to just learn a little bit about us. I know we kind of talked and rambled for a while, but, you know, it was an intro. You guys don't know us. It's for you guys to, you know who we are from our music, you know what our music background is and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then all this time, of course, I was trying out the non-alcoholic beer that Frank brought in. And for those of you who don't know, Shiner Bock is my favorite. So I'm actually drinking one of those right now, too. Opened one of those during the recording. But those are our lists. And if... you guys can leave us your top 10 lists on any of our social media or on our website. Just leave a comment. Also, too, we will be showing our honorable mentions list on our website. So we'll be posting that, too. So just keep a lookout. It looks like we'll be releasing an episode probably every Saturday. Well, today's Friday. We'll be probably recording on Fridays or Saturday earlier, whatnot. We'll figure it out. Yeah. But like I said, the first episode, hope you guys enjoyed it. We're going to be learning more about beer as we go along. This was just, you know, to let you know what this podcast is going to be about. With that said, yeah. Wait, what?
I said like, share.
Oh, yeah, like, share.
No, comment, that, subscribe. You know, all that good stuff. All that cheesy.
You guys have anything to say before we leave?
No. I mean, yes. It was... No, I mean, it was fun doing this. I actually was a little hesitant to share my list because I was like, my shit's all over the place, you know. Same. But it's good, you know, because it shows that you're not stuck in that one, I guess, what, box, mm-hmm. if you want to say. No. But it's good for us to talk about what influences us, what we grew up listening to, mm-hmm. what we enjoy listening to. And it's also, I mean, not just music, but I feel like, you know, even literature, movies, hobbies that you do that probably aren't what someone's thinking about. But yeah, no, it was fun doing this and I enjoyed it and I look forward to doing more episodes as well.
Sweet. Well, the goal is 50. That's my first goal. But Britt, you got anything to say?
No, but next time I will do my homework and I will have my list ready to go.
Sounds good. Well, we'll talk about what our next... topic is going to be, and then if you guys have any suggestions about topics or suggestions about what we should drink, because I know there's a lot of regional stuff too, but I wouldn't mind trying to hunt stuff down. So leave us your suggestions, and until next time,
bye.
Cheers.
Bye.